You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Friday, January 16th, 2015. My name's Matt Binder.
I'm Michael Brooks.
And this is The Majority Report. We are broadcasting to you live in the industrially ravaged, we are underwater, folks, in the Gowanus Canal.
In the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On today's program,
we are in our scuba gear. We are under the water.
Very committed to that joke.
Yes, I am. And luckily, there's a phone line under here.
There is a phone line. Because Brooklyn real estate is really, really hot right now. We got a great deal on this because we are literally underwater. Today's program, political maestro Cliff Schechter, the much, much, much older Jewish brother I never had growing up, will join us also.
We will have Matthew Film Guy with a movie recommendation, and I assume we will also be talking about TV shows, the Oscar nominations.
How about Selma getting snubbed?
Yes, we will definitely be talking about all of that, and we have plenty of stories for you, too.
Lots of stories, folks. Rush Limbaugh, is the Pope trolling him? And Dalai Lama taking it another step further in this week in leftist religious leadership. The governor of Michigan, Republican Rick Snyder, not going to be president. Explain to you why. And what else we got?
We got a lovely story about a tech investor who can't get back into the country. I wonder why. We'll have to find out. We'll have to see what's going on. It has to do with Bitcoin.
Freedom.
And freedom.
Freedom.
And Jesus.
And fashionable ideas that it's offensive to call fashionable.
Yes. And also my favorite story of the week.
Yes.
Has to be this poll we'll get to where we find out what New Yorkers really think about the de Blasio NYPD feud.
Yeah, I'll tell you what I think about the mayor. All right, I got to stop doing my Italian. That impression is basically inspired by Eddie Murphy Raw, and that was a whole bit about Italians after they watch Rocky. I recommend everybody watch that on YouTube. Also, just want to note really quick before we get to Cliff, there is an ongoing investigation to that bomb that was planted at that NAACP office in Colorado a little over a week ago. This is getting no coverage. And, you know, fortunately, obviously, it's because part of the reason is because nobody was hurt, thank God, or thank whoever you want to thank. So glad, obviously, that nobody was harmed. But it is pretty astonishing the fact that this has gotten no coverage. I know the FBI is continuing to investigate it and follow leads. There's nothing really new on that aspect of the case, but it is really astonishing that there's no real coverage of that. There was a terrorist cell that was disrupted in Belgium yesterday. Two people died. Apparently, they were planning a large attack. We just wanted to mention those two things up top. We will be right back with Cliff Schechter. Thank you for listening. Eminem Casual Friday. Oh, once again, Sam Steeder out today, obviously. But I'm sure he'll fill you in on that later. Okay, thanks, everybody. We'll be right back.
America, a chapter, and the whole Jamaica a chap call on. A long time them won't drink the rasta man. Like them no know said that one a real African. You think me no member? King Ferdinand and Stephen Columbus have a golden plan. They make a brown sun and end up in Caribbean. One Ross, then a side till enough Indian. And turn paradise in a plantation. And bring cross one ship load of African. Now here comes the Stephen Queen from England. Now she come a well and envy mother. Send ship on top of century full of separation. And after 400 years, me send a reparation. I know them want to kill me with the taxation. But I beg you, please send me to the motherland. I beg you, carry me go home. I bring me from the east. I'm on a rastana. A rastana live on the chachana. Could I never carry me go home?
Carry me go home.
As every second sees.
As every second land sees.
Come on a rastana. A rastana live on the chachana.
Rastana live on the chachana.
Watch them pan it up at the hill. And looking at them plate how we properly feel. Because downtown have shot off the kill. Them tell it to a risk every stop.
We are back on the Majority Report. My name is Matt Binder.
And I am Michael Brooks. And Chronix always puts me in a good mood. And you know what else puts me in a good mood? My, as I said in the introduction, the older Jewish brother that I never had growing up, my friend, our weekly political maestro, Cliff Schechter. But of course, before he can respond to that salutation from me, we need to have the Cliff Schechter theme song. Let's take a listen.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC, New Media, Public Relations, and Strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, LibertasLLC.com.
So Matt, off camera, just soulfully singing along to that. Cliff, how you doing, man?
He's very soulful.
He is.
Thank you.
I think this. I think the Majority Report is a soulful program.
It is soulful. Matt is very soulful, particularly when he's mocking people on Twitter. It's actually
he does that with a lot of soul.
It's actually one of my activities of the day when I've got a little break in between work. I try to look for Matt and see who he's making fun of and bringing up their tweet from like July 5th, 2012 or something. Where they said exactly the opposite of what they're saying today, and he brings it out and reminds them. It's
what is great about those ones is sometimes people will recognize that Matt's like destroying them, and they go, oh, I totally contradicted myself. I'm going to go delete that tweet. The best is when people are like, yeah, same thing.
No
yeah, problem.
Exactly. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
It's America,
what are you talking
baby?
About? I contradicted myself? You're gay.
Yeah, you're gay and guns, God, grits, gravy, and Huckabee. They're
oh,
awesome.
My God.
Oh, man.
I got to just say really quick, Cliff, before we get to our stories, there's a lot to get to, but I thought of you because I was filling in on Ring of Fire this past week. And, you know, Huckabee recently, you know, he has that new book out and he's clearly going to run. And he said that Jay-Z was pimping Beyonce. And the way I heard it and that the Obamas were bad parents for letting them listen – their kids listen to Beyonce.
That part I heard. I didn't hear. Did he said he's pimping
he
her?
He said he's pimping. And the first thing I thought of was like when you're training for a sporting event, like if you're, you know, at the U.S. Open and you're looking over at the next training court and you're looking at Nadal – and you're just seeing him train, you're like, whoa, man, I got to bring my A game. So like the other Republican candidates are like, whoa, dude, that's race. That's misogyny. That's the Obama thing. Like, all right, Huckabee's real. Like he's in training. Got to bring my A game in this cycle.
He's a good Arkansas Republican because they can fit like five different forms of bigotry into one sentence.
It was amazing.
He pulled off.
Also,
I mean, when you combine it with that uncle, you know, what was it, Uncle Sugar and that whole thing?
Yes.
Like he's just obsessed with women's sex, which
he is.
Tell you everything you need to know. He's going to be busted one of these times, one of these days. You know it.
Oh.
Unless he becomes president, he'll be with, like, you know, underage girls or, I mean, something sickening.
The clock is on. I always, like, I have different, like, number clocks running for different people in my head, and there's varying, like, I agree with you. For Huckabee, it will be something like underage girls, which is disgusting. I think for, you know, Ted Cruz, I actually genuinely terrified to find out what his sex scandal is going
to
be.
Also, a note to all Republican candidates, attacking Jay-Z and Beyonce, great way to reach out to the youth.
As well as the African-American community, yeah.
That is. That's the way you get that younger generation of those different people.
No, I mean, right, man, I was out – I was in a bar in Bed-Stuy in my neighborhood, and a lot of people – and this guy came up to me. He's like, dude, I know you know about politics. Who's this guy that dissed Jay-Z? He's fat. I got to take a look at him. That's fascinating. Yeah, Beyonce
sucks.
If
you want to know what Ted Cruz's issue is
– What is Ted Cruz's issue?
Did you ever see The Wolf of Wall Street?
Yeah, of course. Love that movie.
Let's just say when he goes to sleep at night, he's having dreams. He's yelling out Venice in the middle of the night.
Helga! All right. Another reference from that movie. I really enjoyed that movie. Okay, Cliff, as everybody I'm sure knows, either from your bio or just from listening to you, you're a New York boy. And you're also a D.C. political pro, a progressive one, an outsider one, but D.C. Trained. And you've lived in other great urban centers. But you have chosen, for many reasons, including family ones, but probably your own sanity, to have a quiet life in Ohio. And I want to know, with the news that's happened this past week, when did all the craziness go to your new home? Like what?
It's amazing.
Tell us what's going on over there.
It's amazing what we've done here in just my city. And I shouldn't say my, but the city I live in. Yeah, you know, that's like I was in New York for 9/11. I was in Washington when the sniper was going around. I mean, in those towns that are known for having issues of sorts for some pretty crazy stuff, you know. But who knew? Cincinnati this past week, we have been impressive. First, we had a guy who I think alternately thought he was Jesus Christ and potentially someone else and thought John Boehner is the devil. And frankly, he's not that far off on that one. But
I didn't know the devil cried that much.
That's true. The devil is – well, if you remember in the South Park movie, the devil cried a little bit when Saddam Hussein wasn't nice to him.
that is the Boehner devil, man. You're right. Wow.
That is the Boehner devil. So so he went and and so Boehner, while probably crying and drinking some booze at a bar, apparently this guy hated him enough that he had a plan to poison him. But I guess he was showing – he had been taking his prescription drugs. I mean, I'm making jokes, but obviously this guy is mentally ill.
Right.
He had been taking his prescription drugs, and he stopped because he felt okay. And this is actually a serious problem. Right. In that community, you know, I shouldn't say community, but among the people who have mental health issues who start feeling, you know, like they're okay. And if we're not monitoring and we don't spend any money on that in this country, sometimes they'll stop and then revert. And he did. But the problem that's a unique one, particularly to this country, is he, of course, went and bought two assault weapons. And when the police they found this guy threatening Boehner's life online, saying he wanted to shoot him somewhere publicly.
Right.
This is at the Westchester. It is the Wetherington Country Club in Westchester, which is sort of as Westchester is to New York, Westchester is to Cincinnati, similar suburb, exurb. You know,
very affluent.
And, yeah.
Yeah.
And so this guy, and you'd think, I mean, it's not like Boehner isn't slowly poisoning himself to death by what he drinks. You sort of just let it run its course, right? You don't need to go dumping polonium in there, do you?
Is that Al Franken said Rush, that his book about Rush Limbaugh was just an attempt to save him from food assisted suicide?
Exactly. I guess I'm even getting into making the Vladimir Putin jokes now.
Yeah.
Because it would have been cool if Boehner, like, no, I shouldn't even make jokes. I'm not going to take this any further, but to say
– give it a couple weeks, Cliff, then make all
exactly.
The
I know. I always do that too soon.
Yeah.
But point being, obviously, this is a serious issue. And again, it does bring up that issue of this is a guy who our mental health system has clearly failed and who had access – to weaponry because John Boehner himself, of course, one of the members of the crazy Republican Party who will never allow a vote, to even make people like this guy have to go through a background check to prove he's not hearing voices and thinking he's Jesus when he goes and buys two assault weapons. That's clearly too much to ask in a civilized society.
Yeah, you know, and I swear, you know, Cliff, the first thing that I thought of when I saw this story, because, I mean, other than I thought two things, right? That is amazing because one – this is a perfect illustration of the failures of public mental health in this country, and especially given the fact that this guy, relatively speaking, was okay. He had a job. He had access to medication, let alone all of the people who are completely excluded from the system because of, you know, decimating the social safety net. Then he can go and buy guns with absolutely no monitoring. And I swear to God, Cliff, when I first saw this, and I only say this half jokingly, I said, you know, in another month, you're going to see a rider on some type of bill, some type of amendment or something, that, you know, on some spending bill, and they're going to quietly slip in like background checks for people who work at country clubs frequented by Republican members of Congress. Right? Like,
right.
How can we deal with this in a way that, well, that actually is kind
how
of scary.
How can we deal with it in a way that just protects
right.
us
right.
and still allows, keeps the NRA happy so they can keep giving us all sorts of money that I can use on tanning and golfing and drinking and
right.
smoking and all the other pleasant things that make John Boehner, John Boehner.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, that. But then this week that was only half the equation. I'm going to give you something you didn't even know in the beauty of where you began this show, asking me about where I live and what was going on here. Not
yeah.
only did our second gentleman, who had a plan, how far along, I don't know yet. Well, how much of it I trust, I'm not sure. I mean, I trust that he was planning on it. Whether he was actually a threat is the question.
Right.
But he, a young guy who had converted to Islam, but
right.
far, obviously, that's not the issue. The issue is he started identifying himself with ISIS.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting when you're from the west side of Cincinnati, which is Catholic. The west side of Cincinnati, I bring that up because my wife grew up there, and he went to her high school, this guy.
Does so, your wife also have an interest in ISIS, Cliff? Or
More on purely on a sort of, I think, let's see what ISIS is up to kind of level, not on a,
not
hey,
an operational
I want to try that
level.
Whole handlebar okay. training routine kind of thing. You know what I mean? I don't think she's really gotten to that point yet. So I'd
get you pretty ripped. But anyways, go, yeah.
It probably would.
Yeah.
But then you'd be ripped apart by a drone and would kind of defeat the purpose, I think.
True story.
I mean, that's amazing. I mean, this guy graduated, you know, a couple, whatever it was, probably about a few years ago from her high school. So obviously it's not like he was there when she was there and they don't know each other.
Right.
Because again, I'm not Mike Huckabee and don't like underage girls. My wife's a little older than that. Oh, wait, did I repeat
we
that?
We just decided. I like that.
There
you, that that's
no, but
the
it may
political
not be true.
Pro at
I mean,
work,
to,
ladies and gentlemen, right there.
Just to say, as John Kyle once said, that was not meant to be a factual statement. Like when he said that Planned Parenthood was like 97% abortion, and it turned out it was like 3% of what they do.
Right.
So not a factual statement, people, but if you want to just mention Huckabee and young girls in the same sentence, you could do that. You just can't, you know. So in any case.
I mean, like
I
you literally can. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so I digress. I mean, the point being that we had two sort of, well, I mean, two threats of violence. And so the guy here who went to my wife's high school, we should know him that way from now on, he was planning on potentially, and again, I don't know how realistic this plan was, but
right.
what I do know is he's of age, he's over 18, he could have gotten weaponry at any gun show on any weekend here from a private seller or any flea market or online, because we do that in this wonderful state and, well, in 32 states or so still in this country where you can get away with that without a background check. And so at the very least, if he had a car and went to a, and he hadn't been sort of, you know, and he hadn't done things to sort of get the FBI interested in him, just had decided one day I'm going to do this, went and bought these weapons, put them in the back of his car, drove the 6 hours, 7 hours it takes to get to D.C. You know, he could have driven up to at least where the guards were, and he could have caused some mayhem.
You know, so, Cliff, it's so amazing because there are three kind of really big things that leap out for me from this. And you know, number one, you know, taking aside, there are some legitimate questions about the FBI and kind of low-hanging fruit in these sorts of cases and how much of a threat does somebody actually pose and, you know, whether or not are they actually a hardcore, you know, prospective terrorist or are they like a troubled young man that, you know, needs, you know, maybe some punishment but counseling, whatever. That's one question. But the other thing is that all of these issues from mental health to an identity crisis to also – in a third category, which is an emerging impulse towards you know, these kind of smaller scale terrorist attacks like we saw in Paris. This is definitely a new kind of operational goal and focus of groups like Al-Qaeda, which is instead of going for some large mass scale event, they're basically just picking soft targets that you can mow people
right.
down in. And I mean, and so in all three of these issues, from an actual, you know, prospect of terrorist attacks to collapse of mental health and, you know, the modern identity crisis of, you know, young men or whatever, through all of these, everything is enabled by the fact that we refuse to put the same regulations on guns that we do on I mean, you know, on anything. Tires, frankly. I mean,
aspirin,
anything.
Cars.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, any. Yeah, I mean, well, and that's true. And I mean, again, I know this is an issue I talk about a decent amount. I don't mean to bring everything back to this issue because, as I've said, obviously there's a mental health problem here. There are other issues, too. The thing is, though, is that while a lot of Western European countries and other sort of high-income democracies do fund mental health better than we do, they don't all do that. The one common strand, you know, in all of this. So yes, we could do a better job on that front. Absolutely, a far better job. But the common strand here with all of this is that all these other places, you know, they have enacted laws that make it so most people cannot get their hands on this kind of weaponry. And so, yes, sadly, these guys in France, these terrible, terrible people who mass murdered, they were able to do it because if you have enough money and enough international connections.
And their arms dealer was arrested. I mean, this was
right,
a
but
crime.
They caught the guy.
Yeah.
Right. That's the point is they were able to trace the gun where it came from, which we can't do a lot of the time here because we don't try. Because we don't have records, we don't follow up. We do all these kinds of things to make it harder. The NRA spends all their time attacking the ATF, and we allow them to. They fight to defund it. We didn't even have somebody running the ATF for 7 years.
Right.
By the way, you know, because the NRA didn't want anybody there, and they kept having it blocked, and the Senate had to approve the director. So I mean, yeah, you're right. That terrible thing happened, but. That same week that happened in France, 80-something people were dying in this country because of firearms.
And we couldn't even arrest. I mean, look, if those brothers in the United States, if they had no criminal backgrounds and they had no, you know, no issues in terms of their profile they presented, and either of these two cases that you're talking about in Cincinnati – there wouldn't be anything to trace because either of them could go into a Walmart, frankly, and buy whatever the hell they wanted.
That's exactly true, you know, and I mean, and even in France, look, it's not the even there, again, this has always been the case that there are going to be some mobsters and some, you know, international terrorists and others who can get around even very strict laws. But it's a lot harder also if you're doing your job right when it comes to investigating. And, you know, I don't want to get into this overall because all I think the French people deserve now is just sympathy and our respect for the fact that they've pulled it together. They had an amazing march in Paris and the rest. But when it comes to sort of law enforcement, kind of like what happened with us on 9/11, where we had a couple people on no-fly lists, they got into this country. We had the guy, you know, what's his name? I'm forgetting this one. Zakawi, right?
Yeah.
I'm forgetting. Zacharias Massawi,
yeah,
is it?
Yeah, yeah.
Who in Minnesota, he just wanted to learn how to steer a plane, not take it off or land it. We arrested him, didn't put the – I mean, we had a number of ways we
just
could have put that
together.
Just want
to get to the heart of the thing, okay?
Right, and in France – one of the guys had spent a couple of years in prison for sending jihadists abroad to Iraq.
No, and one had trained in Yemen. I mean, there definitely was an intelligence failure there.
Right.
Yeah, but
right. And I'm sorry, but I don't think I don't believe, you know, you don't throw someone in Guantanamo. You don't execute them. You don't put them in jail for life. You know, some of the people say, well, what should we have done? Well, to me, at the very least, at that point, if you're breaking international law and you're breaking law of your country and doing that, I would say I don't care if you're, you know, I would have a trial, and if you're found guilty, you should be deported besides going to prison.
Right.
I mean, if you're that kind of a security threat, you shouldn't be in the country if you're behaving that way. So that's my feeling anyhow. And so I think in some level that these guys should have been, you know, they should have been under much closer watch. I know you can't watch everybody, but there was clearly some signs with these guys and some intelligence failures.
Well, and again, I think that actually circles back to the point about, you know, at least from a U.S. perspective, where I think that there are actually a lot less of this type of activity, and even the activity in Europe like this is incredibly low. But that's the point, is if intelligence services are focusing on, hey, maybe we can lure some idiot into buying into some fake scheme, and we're handling him the whole time with FBI agents – we could put some kind of, you know, fool or troubled young person in jail. Maybe occasionally that's an actual threat, but we're just doing a lot of low-hanging fruit and not doing the actual work of figuring out how to disrupt an actual thing like we saw in Paris. But I want to get clear.
Let me just say very quickly, again, you have to keep this all in perspective, which is that same week, 80-something people in this country died from firearms. In addition to the 17 that died there, maybe one or two others did if you follow French statistics. So we still were four times as much gun violence that week. And then we did the next week, and we will the week after, where this was a one-time thing. And the second thing is, one of these groups called The Truth About Guns, one of these right-wing loon groups, where else they're located in Texas, tried to simulate this whole thing to prove in there, so they could show everybody how if there had just been a couple people concealed carrying there and this whole thing happened, they could have prevented it. Do you know out of the dozen situations they set up, just like the one in the magazine, how many times the people, their own people, for their propaganda purposes, failed at stopping the terrorists from coming in and executing them? You know, they're doing it with paintballs and whatever. Every single time they fail.
Wow.
So for their own little experiment,
their
they were going to use for propaganda
simulation,
purposes.
They still failed.
Yes.
That's great.
They still failed. Because the truth, if you're surprised by somebody, people bring up the American Sniper now because of the movie. Well, guess what? He was one of the best shooters probably in the world. He was surprised by somebody and shot and killed. That's what happens when you're surprised. It doesn't matter how good a shot you are.
Absolutely. So. And I think the other thing that I just want to kind of add as a quick addendum to this too is that we're talking about this in terms of – because you're quite right to keep mentioning the fact that, you know, the rate of gun homicides in America is, you know, 80 people dying in the same week that this attack happened in Paris, and we're doing nothing about it. Take it to the other side of the border, where, you know, there's a serious security crisis in Mexico with cartels and, you know, and in some respect, and some of them engaging, frankly, in all sorts of human rights abuses that rival and maybe even exceed ISIS in some cases. And I remember one guy made the argument, I think it was Steve Cole, made the argument a couple years ago that by the same logic that the Obama administration uses to justify drone strikes in Pakistan, the Mexican government could do drone strikes on gun shops in Arizona, because guns are literally flooding from us to Mexico, fueling this crisis. And in key, and the common denominator is a domestic arms industry which functions basically like a legal mafia. It has no interest in our public safety, has no care about our security or our health, and that's what locks the policy in. And it's disgusting, and you're right to keep bringing it up.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And I will, because it's to me, it's one of a good half dozen right now of the biggest policy failures in this country that's getting a lot of people killed. And so
definitely,
we need to talk about it.
So let's go briefly, because there's sort of some amusing and depressing news to get to, and potentially some glimmers of hope. We'll get to the glimmers of hope last. But speaking of why there is this, you know, total political failure in America, particularly on guns, you can't help but talk about the Republican Party. And what is so funny is that clearly Mitch McConnell and John Boehner, the kind of lobbyist bagman far right, who kind of wanted to take over Congress, sit there on their majorities and quietly decimate the social safety net and hand favors out to their buddies. I think that they were planning on maybe we could have several months before the presidential race heats up and we can, you know, give a lot of, you know, run the corporate Tammany Hall or whatever it is their vision of governing is for the next couple of months. So
that's
please,
about right, actually.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. So if you guys could, you know, people want to run for president, just cool it for a couple of months. Don't come out and talk about, you know, the Civil Rights Act or rape or whatever. And then all of a sudden on the first, Steve Scalise spoke to white supremacists. And now the presidential race is starting. Mitt Romney, we had an incredible amount of fun reliving his great humiliations. And I think I finally found a way to impersonate Mitt, but it made me lightheaded, actually. But that's a story for another day. You know, Jeb Bush is obviously, you know, it's now or never for him. And even the dregs of the dregs, Rick Santorum, is actually talking about running for president. So,
and he's ripping the other social conservatives,
and
which
he's
is
ripping
what is so
them.
Awesome about it. Like, he's ripping Paul and Cruz, and they're ripping him and Huckabee. And now on the establishment side, I feel like, you know, my guess is that you know, and again, let's be clear, because I think I said something out on this on Twitter the other day. I can't stand it when these guys get away with saying, well, the more moderate establishment, they're not moderate by, I mean, if you look at Mr. Severe Conservative Romney, if you look at Jeb Bush's record as governor, they're not more moderate. There's really only two things that you have to have to be an establishment Republican, which is you need to, or one or the other, you need to either be wealthy or be from a coastal state or both.
Right.
That makes you an establishment Republican, because they're not, all right? They're not, in other words, they're not any more, I mean, they may be slightly more moderate on something, and I shouldn't even say slightly more moderate, all right? They may be slightly more on, like, immigration, one thing that makes, because it's the business people are coming for them.
Right.
But that's it. And so, yeah, I mean, it's been a lot of fun because basically what Mitt Romney's jumped, you know, Jeb thought he could sort of announce, he was looking into it, take his time. The other conservatives have been sort of running for a while. We know who they are. But I think first Huckabee getting in, because Huckabee did relatively well in 2008 and does have a base of support with basically being involved with every right-wing network, book, you know, whatever, over the last 8 years since he ran. But then even more so Romney, because Romney obviously is going to have the leftover name recognition that's going to put him in first place in a lot of these polls. He does have wealthy friends who he can fundraise with. And so, you know, that creates a situation where it puts pressure on the other wing of the party. So Huckabee's kind of pressured the Rand Pauls of the world to jump in like full force, which Rand has now done. And that's led him to go around and say stupid things, insulting veterans about Social Security
right.
and others, because they're trying to, one of the first acts of this Republican Congress who said they care about elderly people who voted for them was to try and say that that Social Security needs to be reformed, or they're not going to give out disability payments under Social Security, which, by the way, includes a lot of veterans who they claim to always like.
And reform means cut, as we know. And you know, and Rand Paul not only insulted that, I mean, to get specific, he basically said a lot of people who have supposed disabilities, they have a sore back, or they have like a bad, you know, it's an emotional issue. I mean, that was literally what he said. And I think it's just fascinating because, you know, there's nothing better, particularly with and we'll get to it, because it actually looks like the Democrats might finally be pricking up and figuring things out a little bit. But nothing historically is better for damaging the Republican Party than giving the country undivided attention to the Republican Party.
Yeah, that's the beauty of it. I just want the more of these guys to talk, to have their clown car debates. There may be 30 of them this time for all we know, all going at each other like lions in, you know, in a Roman arena, just tearing each other apart. And, you know, there really isn't much more than a dime's worth of difference between any of them. I mean, they're all right-wing kooks, and there's just different levels of right-wing kookdom. But they're, you know, they're not, as I said, not vastly different levels. None of them, between all of them, have an economic plan that can work and do anything for this country. None of them, between all of them, have a health care plan that can do anything to help this country. None of them, between all of them, have an education plan to help this country. There's really just different levels of how much they hate different groups of people. That's the only thing that differentiates them.
Let me say this, too. I mean, I want to actually ask you a more kind of substantive point about this. But I think I just want to say, like, does anybody doubt, you know, Rand Paul rightly gets a lot of flack for opposing the Civil Rights Act, and absolutely correctly. And he whines about it. Now he denies that he ever said it, but, you know, it's like literally on tape. He opposed the Civil Rights Act. Does anybody doubt that any of these candidates, the Mitt Romney, Jeb Bush, maybe even Ben Carson, does anybody doubt that if they were in politics, the political equivalents of themselves in the 1960s, that any of them would have voted for the Civil Rights Act or the Voting Rights Act? None of them would. None of them.
Nor Medicare, nor Medicaid, nor Social Security, none of them.
Well, that's the stuff they're upfront about. I'm saying even with civil rights, which they would all kind of say, oh, well, of course I would support that.
They have to pretend
that they wouldn't.
No. I really think, you know, my guess would be virtually none of them. If Jeb Bush or Mitt Romney had stayed true to the lineage of their families in the Republican Party, I'm talking going back to Prescott Bush, I'm talking George Romney, who were actual moderates,
right,
and George Romney, who was a supporter of civil rights, maybe, but, you know, but only if they could get away with it. They've betrayed that legacy. So the men they are today, if they were just to suddenly go back in time, no, they couldn't, because they, you know, and so, I mean, Yeah, you've got all that. The one thing I wanted to say before we change any topic or even move on at all is when you brought that comment by Rand Paul about the sore back and, I mean, saying such obnoxious things and ridiculing people. And people need to always remember one thing with this guy, with what a dishonest huckster he is. Because when he was an ophthalmologist, he took patients on Medicare. Okay?
Right.
The guy who's principally against Medicare and doesn't think, you know, because the government's too big. And when asked why he did it, he said, well, doctors have the right to make a decent living, too.
I have a right to make a good living and right. respect the
So he has the right to make a good living.
Oh my
if
God,
you're disabled, if That's you're right. disabled, you don't have the right to make a good living.
Right.
You don't have the right to do okay, apparently. You should be mocked.
Right.
Right. If you're African American, you don't have the right to have him support you in the Civil Rights Act. Of course, now he's claiming he would have, but we know for years he claimed quite publicly he wouldn't have, because that was just going too far and taking the personal rights away. And the government's doing too much. When the government's doing too much, however, in his view, to give people Medicare, which he gets wealthy off of, that's totally different.
Yeah,
he has the right
totally
to living.
Doable.
So that's. Totally different, right? Yeah. Exactly.
No, the last point I want before we move to the Democrats is it, you know, earlier this week Sam had on Thomas Schaller talking about his new book, Stronghold, and really basically
great guy, by the way, great book.
Really, really interesting argument. I think it is fascinating. I've always been of the school that, you know, Paul Ryan is like, you know, what Diet Coke is to health, Paul Ryan is to intellectualism. Like, I never buy this whole notion that he's some great policy wonk. But I did
right.
think it was really interesting that he chose to not – that he's not going to run in 2016. Frankly, I think if he ran, he could be a guy who could get a lot of support because he could – you know, he is a rabid extremist right winger for real and has credibility with that community. But he ticks enough boxes and has enough of a kind of fake narrative around him to – you know, for at least them to think he would be appealing in a general election. He clearly has his eyes on being Speaker and being a power broker in the House. And it does look like – you know, is this just where we're at? That Republicans have gerrymandered the House – there is maybe an acceptance outside of the kind of emotional delusions of a guy like Mitt Romney that them winning the White House is going to be really difficult. I mean, of course, possible, but very difficult. But hey, we can just sit in Congress, cash lobbyist checks, and hold up progress or inflict damage. And that's the strategy. And to me, like, I buy the demographic arguments. It really doesn't favor Republicans. It really is we are moving as a country, certainly socially, and I think even economically amongst public attitudes, not amongst elites, but amongst broad public attitudes into a more progressive direction. But they can just sit there from tiny districts and hold things up.
Well, that's very true. And that is a problem. There's a bigger problem actually also when it comes to Paul Ryan, and you can lay the blame right at the doorstep of absolute disgraced failure of a DCCC chairman, Steve Israel, which is he gave no support to a couple of very competent, very, very, really good candidates who took on Paul Ryan. Mm. That is not one of these gerrymandered right-wing districts. Paul Ryan's district is a swing district, which I believe in 2008 Obama won, and in 2012 I believe he was winning it even I think he won – if Ryan – I think on the presidential side, he won the district even though Ryan won the congressional district, or he barely lost it on the presidential side. So the point is that is
right.
a swing district.
That's
it is
incredible.
A district that if we were putting resources into and actually trying to win and making this guy what he should be, the poster boy for all that is wrong, we should be able to knock him out. So he's a separate issue. But overall, you're right. Overall, it's a very dangerous – situation in terms of, you know, the country just not doing anything. I mean, not being able to respond to our problems, because I agree with you. Demographically, in the long run, as Arizona and Georgia move away from these guys with North Carolina and some of these other states, you know, eventually Texas joins that. It may take a little longer than some people optimistically hope. But there is going to be a point where, you know, there are going to be enough states that these guys can't control. That sure, I mean, maybe Kansas isn't changing demographically, and maybe Wyoming isn't, you know, and maybe Mississippi isn't. I'm not saying there won't be a sort of dozen or so states where they can still, you know, continue to be the lunatics they are. But an interesting poll that I saw, you know, and this is going back 6 months, a year ago now, showed that, you know, that the youngest voting generation now, not just, you know, the even white rural members of that generation have jumped to the left of the older generations on issues like gay marriage,
right,
and on economic issues and things of that sort. So I think you're going to see even some of those places change, at least to
definitely
a certain degree, even
definitely
if they don't become progressive.
Well,
not
because
be
I think another big reason that I always say, too, is that for our generations, you know, for younger people who are actually living under – I mean, I know that this stuff started, you know, obviously you've lived through it too, but if you really were like, you know, a millennial, like, you know, any, you know, younger people, all of this stuff that was like an abstraction for so many years, like it hit the poorest, it hit the most vulnerable people that don't get, you know, they don't get talked about nearly enough, obviously, and we know that. But by the time we came of age, you know, accumulating with the economic crisis, all of this stuff was like, it wasn't some fairy tale that Milton Friedman and Ronald Reagan and, you know, Bush were talking about. It was like, oh, my God, this is what it means when you gut education. This is what it
right
means when student loans are quadrupled. This is what it means when you deregulate the financial markets. It means less jobs, terrible inequality. And it even means that, frankly, even if you're in a relatively privileged position, you're paying off way more debt than you would be otherwise. And, you know, and also if and working harder and longer, even in those good positions. And frankly, and you don't, and if, and unless you're a sociopath, you don't feel great about your cohort being totally screwed over.
That's right. I mean, that's part of it. And you can also, I mean, there are issues, I think, with people where the younger people, where they can look at issues that they don't even understand why gay rights is an issue.
Absolutely.
Why it's even being argued about.
Absolutely.
And the other day, something like this came up. I mean, remember, my son, my older son is 8, and something about, you know, my wife and I were talking about something, and she was like, why would somebody, and it just, it came up, and my son basically knows what being gay is, you know, he knows people who are two men who are together and whatever, doesn't know details, he's too young, but
right
knows the basics, and when it's come up, you know, he's something came up, and he was like, why would somebody discriminate against somebody because they love another man?
Right.
He doesn't even get it. He doesn't get it. And
no,
so,
it's unfathomable. And I think actually the other big part of that, Cliff, that's also true is that starts to eliminate the whole like, well, I'm a social, liberal, fiscal, conservative thing, because at this point it's become like, well, if you have such a crazy view of gay people, wouldn't your views of the economy be just as demented and bizarre as that? Like, why would there be
right
any difference?
No, that's true. And I'm just saying, I think for younger
yeah
people, that's an issue. I think immigration, because of their who their friends are, I think that, you know, when it comes to – but when it comes to the stuff hitting you personally also – and that stuff hits you personally because it's your friends.
Right.
But also when you come out and you're seeing the fact that most people are working many more hours,
yep,
wages – you know, as much as the economy is coming back now, wages are still flat and they still suck. And you're seeing – that the cost of living has gone up in a lot of cities – that people, millennials and other people just coming out of school will try to live in, you know, as many people do often. They maybe end up going back to where they came from eventually, whatever. But you try living in New York or San Francisco or Chicago, you know, or a place like that, and suddenly you can't even afford it.
That's how you start a career, like, yeah. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, you're living with, you know, 8 people in a 2-bedroom or something, and you just can't do anything. And so it's you know, I think that how can that not affect people's thinking, people who grew up during the Bush years and saw this?
Absolutely. And then I think that this brings us to where the Democrats are now, because I think a couple of things are happening. I mean, look, on one hand, obviously, I think what we're seeing from an emboldened President Obama is that he's finally governing as, you know, he's not that progressive. He's not that left wing, but I think he's a genuine, you know, center-left leader. And that means good things for things like immigration, for climate. It means good things on certain economic issues, like pushing for higher minimum wage, paternity leave, maternity leave. This is great stuff. But it seems like finally some of the people like Chris Van Hollen, who's, you know, a very mainstream Democrat, they're finally getting that it's not just that Elizabeth Warren is right substantively, but this is the obvious place to be politically, which is pushing for taxes on Wall Street, pushing for really addressing all the issues you just outlined.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, because I think that one goes with the other. You know, as they say, good policy makes good politics, and I think it certainly it's true. And there are people, again, Elizabeth Warren has been so forthright about this. And these are the same things a lot of us have been yelling about when we looked at the results of the last election and looked at people that had barely won the election before in at least what we would consider swing states, like examples being Al Franken in Minnesota and Jeff Merkley in Oregon.
Yep.
And they just cleaned the other side's clocks. They, right from the beginning, those races were no longer even competitive, because they come out and they speak in a manner where people know what they're going to do for them. And this has happened where it was, I think it was Hart Research did a poll around the country, and they said that people were not excited, certainly very unexcited about any of the Republicans, tired of people Bush, and frankly, they weren't overly excited with Hillary Clinton. They certainly liked her better than all the Republicans, which is good news.
Right.
But the one name that kept coming up from – he said it didn't matter, Democrats, Independents, and Republicans – was Elizabeth Warren.
Absolutely.
Because they felt like – even people who disagreed with her socially felt like she was on their side. I've seen that here in Ohio with Sherrod Brown.
Right.
All right? Again and again. We saw that with Tom Harkin in Iowa. We've seen this with progressives in either swing states, purple states, or even somewhat more red states that are willing to run on these types of issues. The problem is that the Democratic Party has walked away from this and given small bore – sort of answers. Well, we just raised the minimum wage. Well, that's great, and that's important, but that's not an overall plan,
right?
What Chris Van Hollen has is a multi-part plan to help people, and we're talking about raising a financial transaction tax.
Right.
We're talking about ways that the top 1% would be taxed, and ways that would provide opportunities and tax cuts for the middle class. You couple that on top of this sort of born again, suddenly progressive President Obama, or at least outwardly progressive, talking about things like community college and talking about Cuba, and these kind of immigration. And these kinds of things that have also been helpful, although he may ruin all of that with his free trade plan.
Right.
But so people hear this stuff. They get it. And it makes a difference.
It makes a huge difference
in the way people vote.
And I think, Cliff, just to add on to that, and I want, your final thoughts as we wrap up. But I think that's a really, really big point, because people have made the point in the past that I think has some validity to it. I'm not always persuaded by it, but it has some validity that, in a race between two conservatives, people are going to pick the real conservative. And, and that's sort of like the jibe at, Democrats running these sort of like pseudo conservative races to try to match Republicans on, I love the guns and Bible just as much as you. And that's a fair point. But I think the deeper point is what you just alluded to, which is like, if you trot out the Koch brothers, or if you talk about minimum wage, that's great, but it's incoherent. It doesn't fit in a story. It doesn't fit in a package.
Right.
It doesn't hang together. Republicans hang together.
There.
There's
nothing that gives it context.
It doesn't.
Why?
Exactly. These guys are bad. You should have a few more bucks in your paycheck. Great. But where's the overarching thing? What makes it fit? Where's the structure? And if they finally start to do that, obviously they need to be held accountable to actually do it. But in the short term, they certainly will be a lot more electorally successful.
I would just say there's a very obvious reason why President Obama's approval rating is back almost up to 50%. Why Elizabeth Warren is being talked about by the people she is, even Republicans, in this poll. Why all these things are happening, and it's because these people are talking like progressives. And the truth of the matter is, once you get past labels that have been demonized by Republicans, like the dreaded L word that you're liberal, which has been making a comeback too, by the way. But that's what they're good at. They're good at providing a label, Obamacare, gun control, whatever it might be, and demonizing that without people being looking. When people look beyond that to the specifics below that, and when they look at the specific things, what they believe in about government's role in our society, about the rights of people to love who they want and associate with who they want, and the rest of that, in almost every one of those questions, they come down majority, and many of them supermajority progressive.
Definitely.
And that's just the way it is. And it's nice to see some people finally embracing it, and Elizabeth Warren proving why one voice, if it's loud enough and charismatic enough and constant enough, can make an enormous difference. I'm not saying it's all her, but she certainly has played a big role.
It's us too, Cliff.
Well, that one voice I meant was yours, Mike.
Oh, well, thank you very much. All right, buddy. It was great, great, great talking to you. And I know you'll be back with Sam next week, and we'll catch up soon. Thanks a lot, man.
Well, I'll either be back on with Sam, or if you guys have a successful coup, maybe I'll be on with you guys again.
It's always possible. The country's always looking for new, more progressive leadership, and this includes this audience.
I'm not sure Sam's doing it anymore, so I think you guys may have to step in.
Steve Israel of radio show hosts. That's totally unfair. All right, man.
Oh, man. I would protect your paycheck now, dude.
I know. I gotta go make amends. All right, buddy. Talk to you soon.
All right, bye.
All right, bye-bye. All right, folks, we are going to take a brief break here, and Matt is going to be back with Matt, film guy.
That's right.
Be right back.
Why, sir, call me out the window as I watch the rain come down. Went into town and ran into you. I sit by the fields and the streams. I heard a certain song. Feeling I hadn't had in a while.
It's good enough for me. I really think it's better off this way. A funk I never made it go away. A feeling never leaves. We just ignore until we wake up tomorrow morning. I was sick of dirty water. I was struggling for words. This place was comfort when I thought the world was cursed. At 6 a.m. we finished covering songs and conversation. Went home, now passed up to the sounds.
Check. Oh, look at that.
Can't hear me, though.
No. Is Matt up?
Matt is up. I don't know what's going on. Hey, I'm the only reason I'm on.
Are you pressing the button?
No, I'm not. We don't know what's going on with Film Guy Matthew, folks.
Hold on. No, that's not him. All right, we'll just cut this out, I guess. And I guess no movie pick, because something's happened to Matthew Film Guy. He's disappeared.
Here, we could play. You want to give it a couple minutes and try again?
Well, it's dialing. Let's give it one more shot here. If he doesn't pick up, he doesn't pick up.
Hopefully everything is okay in Film Guy Matthew world.
If not, I guess we'll talk movies.
We will talk movies. No problem. All right. That's...
Given my little...
You going to give it one? You going to try his other line?
No, he's not picking up.
All right, folks. Okay.
Matthew Film Guy's banned from this show.
He's banned.
Unless something happened.
You know what I love?
Unless there's a good excuse, Matt Film Guy is banned.
By the way, you always get... Like, one time, I was interviewing Mark Ames, and it happened to me. And what was so funny was... And this was at the beginning of the show... And we tried him a bunch of times, and then I noticed like 10, 15 minutes, like maybe even 20 minutes into the show, I noticed a voicemail on Google Voice, and I was like, oh my God, I think that's Mark Ames. And what was great was like, the voicemail was just like, dude, Michael, fuck.
I don't get it.
And then we did a great interview.
All right, well, let's talk movies then.
All right, I want to start. Well, I mean, you lead the way here. I got some thoughts about the Oscars, I guess, but you know, lead the way, buddy.
All right, well, let's talk
Pretend
Oscars first.
That so I am a non-pretentious film guy, Matthew.
Okay, so yesterday, the Academy announced the nominations for this year's Oscars, and there's a bit of a controversy because they I believe it's the whitest, least diverse grouping of people nominated since, I believe, 1995.
I read 98, but I mean, a long time.
That's
a long
still
time.
Shocking.
Same point.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Best actor, all white males. Best actress, all white females.
All white males. No. Yeah.
Thankfully, you know, we've gotten to the point where it's where women were nominated for best actress. No, but
so
support it. Same for supporting actor, supporting actress, best director. And it's not like there was a lack of qualified candidates in this category. You have Selma nominated for Best Picture, which to me seems like it would be an automatic nomination for the director,
so
for Best Director.
So I feel like Sam, because I have to say up front, I think the only movie that I saw that's in this batch is I saw the Grand Budapest Hotel, and then I saw Citizen Four. And I you know, I do watch a fair amount of stuff, but I don't go to the movies that much. But Selma has been, like, literally the only reason I haven't seen Selma is just because, like, I haven't had a moment since it's opened. Right?
Out of all the movies on the list, that's the one I want
to
see most.
And also,
yes.
And then there's this A Most Violent Year I also really want to see. That's very much my kind of movie. That's like, you know, early 80s, New York, home heating business. But look, I think so. I really, but that said, I mean, just from reading about Selma, and I have watched clips of this guy.
Listen,
playing,
on Rotten Tomatoes, Selma has, I believe, it was at 100% fresh rating for such a long time, with all these reviews coming in, which you don't usually see.
So I heard it in.
Usually movies on Rotten Tomatoes, they have a decent rating up to a certain point when all these reviews come in, and then if it's a good movie, it'll still have a pretty good fresh rating. But to see a near 100% rating with all these reviews, that's not something you see every day.
No, I mean, that's like Godfather. I mean, that's like territory where it's like even the people who don't – that's just a question of to what degree do you respect and like this film or not. You know, there's no one – no one, but okay, so I heard three interesting things about this. One – there's the innocent explanation, which is that Selma was released really late, so some people had already submitted their nominations, whatever. I don't really buy it, frankly, but that's one explanation. The other two things that are more interesting and really are super problematic is that one, this guy was pointing out, and I wish I could remember his name, was that the Academy goes when they nominate black actors, and this isn't invalidating any of these performances, obviously. Good performances, but they tend to be people who are portraying people in the helping professions, like butlers, maids, chauffeurs, or the other thing is like bioepics of prominent black entertainers. And what's distinct about Selma is that this is all about African-American leadership. And then the third thing is there's a controversy about how the movie portrays LBJ. Now, I don't know. I know some of that history. If they increased LBJ's opposition to this to enhance the dramatic quality. I mean, it's one of these things. Like, literally, no one has any idea what two people in a room said to each other.
Yeah,
but the general point that MLK was a radical leader and reformer who pushed this whole thing at great personal risk and may have at times, certainly with the Kennedy administration, and Johnson deserves a lot of credit for civil rights, but I'm sure he at times was like, dude, come on, can we not do this right now? That's the point of the movie. So if either it's
you have an hour and a half,
right,
maybe close to 2 hours for some movies to get this point across, to tell a story.
And if either of those two reasons are we don't feel comfortable nominating black actors that aren't in these very slotted categories, or the LBJ controversy were the reasons that this movie didn't clean up, that's a big problem.
All right, hold on. Matt Film Guy, just let me call him back.
Do you want to just call him?
I just call him, yeah.
All right. I'm always happy to play more Chronics, as you know.
Is Sam's computer up?
It's
Sam's computer's up.
Put it lower.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey, sorry about that.
That is okay. What happened? Where'd you go?
What is your problem?
Where'd you go? What happened?
The ringer was just off on my house phone, on my office phone.
Ah, okay. Hold on. I hear you. There's feedback. Are you listening to the show?
Not anymore.
Okay. You don't deserve your theme song today simply because we don't have time anymore.
That's fine. Let's get to the good stuff.
Let's get to the good stuff. So we were just talking about the Oscar nominations and how many feel Selma was snubbed and how it's the least diverse lineup of Oscar nominees in a very long time. So why don't you give us your two cents, Matthew?
Oh, my God. Really?
Okay, you don't have to if you don't want to.
Look, the Oscars are just like a party game for, you know, the Hollywood elite.
I also agree with that. I could care less about these award shows, really. I enjoy watching them to make fun of them online. That's pretty much my
jump in really quick, though?
But go
will
ahead.
It be really quick?
Yeah, really quick. Certainly quicker than it took for you to get on the phone. I did that. But it's one thing to say, and you guys take the conversation wherever you want to. But I feel like even if you and I, we all sit with whatever degree of our own levels of snideness that we have about culture, which we all have. And we're sitting in Brooklyn and we can all agree that look, I don't watch the Oscars. Matt watches it to make fun of it. I assume you don't watch it, Matthew. It's bullshit, whatever. But these things are still cultural markers for people, whether we like it or not.
Oh, yes,
and it's
of course,
like,
yes.
You know, I did find it kind of mind blowing that Selma wasn't nodded to. And if the reasons for it not being nodded to were the ones that I just outlined, I don't know if you heard them.
I didn't.
Well,
but
basically,
I
one that
the,
there's
yo,
a
Rachel.
Well, the comfort with nominating black actors that either essentially play like members of the Help or entertainers.
See, to me, though, that's the bigger deal. Like, I don't care about the award show as much.
Sure.
To me, though, it's let's get to the real problem, and that's how black people are portrayed and what opportunities are given to black actors and actresses in film. I mean, I don't see.
Can I just jump in? My overall thesis about that and about multiculturalism in general is that it's misguided. It's like it's the preschool version of what really needs to be considered in our culture. And it's not the multiculturalism just of ethnicity or just of certain cultures or skin types. It's the multiculturalism of other values other than the sort of basic values that all Hollywood films have to sort of conform to in order to be a commercially viable medium. So to me, it's not about counting the number of women or the number of black actors or so on. That is absolutely a symptom of this other kind of multiculturalism. But simply having different faces and different genders represented in the same kind of way, to me, is... it's almost like you have to compromise your individuality as an artist in the first place to make it into an Oscar type movie.
But that's the argument, yeah. Matthew, is that Selma actually does by deviating in the sense that you're just literally portraying black political leadership, not just as like making an inspiring speech or forgiving white people. That is a different thing historically.
Well, look, I didn't see Selma, and I'm anxious to. I feel very disconnected from this group of Oscar nominees because I haven't seen any of them. I haven't seen almost any of them. And it's generally because these aren't necessarily the movies that move me and excite me in the first place. So maybe I would be more behind a different sort of celebration of film awards if it was covering the films that I generally gravitate towards, so that may just be my personal bias. But I also feel like, again, if we acknowledge that same old tired trope that this is the industry advertising itself, that is the industry promoting itself, that doesn't, of course, immediately negate the value of any of these films, but it does tend to sort of reinforce my own bias, which is like, these aren't the best movies being made. These aren't really the greatest achievements in the form. They're basically, you know, it's the Clios. They give away awards for advertising. They give away awards in the industry for who sells the most couches. You know, it's like this is an internal industry thing. And to me, the only fun about it is you get to see these charismatic, glitzy personalities who are very entertaining and very witty, and the show itself can be fun to watch, even more so the Golden Globes, which I do watch for just for some dry entertainment. But I can't personally get too behind criticizing the Oscars based on their sort of class and race-based sort of bigotry, because their biggest blind spot to me is that they're just mostly a commercial product. And
Donald Trump is tacky. Stop the presses.
Yeah.
That kind of what you're saying.
To me, the biggest outrage of this whole thing is that American Sniper nominated for Best Picture. Once again, Hollywood's got to give the nod to, you know, promoting this whole, like, yay, war. These people, this guy who killed 300 Iraqis, many of them probably citizens or just innocents.
Yeah, and his autobiography may or may not be a complete lie, but this Jesse Ventura thing is cast doubt on
that.
And
this guy claimed to have set up on top of a rooftop during Hurricane Katrina and sniped looters. Like, what? This is the guy we're going to promote? I mean, to me, I wonder how much of it was, oh, it's Clint Eastwood.
Yeah, and you can count on Clint Eastwood to make a sort of, like,
which is
feeling good about feeling bad. You know, you can get a little distance from it.
Let's feel bad for this poor guy who's coming home and has to deal with the fact that I killed 300 people. Oh, I wonder how those 300 people feel.
Well, that's also another interesting part of the thing, though, in terms of there's the lies and there's the despicable things he wrote. And part of the despicable things he wrote that doesn't jibe with the movie was the movie is, I killed all these people. How do I deal with it? His writing is like, I killed all these people. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
I'm good at that.
Hoorah.
Yeah. Yeah. You need me on that wall and all that other bullshit. Like, that's his, you know, attitude. I like Bradley Cooper. I actually do like Bradley Cooper as an actor. I think I like him too.
Yeah.
He could probably make this a sympathetic, you know, I've seen the trailer where he's like, I'm coming home, mom, you know, like, and I've seen, you know, Coming Home that with John Voight, that was actually a very ambiguous movie about whether or not what he did was any good at all, you know, and that was Vietnam, where it was much more appropriate or fashionable to say so, like, well, wow, we were baby killers, we really were, what do we do, you know, so I don't get the sense that Clint Eastwood is going to go there. He's going to, you know, that's the thing that I always liked about the attitude towards these movies. When you say, well, like when Steven Spielberg made Saving Private Ryan and all the World War II veterans came and said, yes, that's exactly how it was. I love this movie. It really captured my essence. And to me, if the people you're making the movie about are behind it 100%, you can almost bet it's some sort of whitewash.
Yes.
You know, you can almost bet that they're only showing the things that they only want to show.
Yeah.
That it's going to flatter the people who are involved. And okay, that's great, and that's fine if you're trying to make a war propaganda movie to get people to go to war and so on. It has a purpose in some ways. But that, to me, is not art. That, to me, is just self-aggrandizing us as a nation or as a species. And these kinds of movies are almost, by definition, not going to challenge anything new in just a worldview, not to mention, you know, I think the idea of multiculturalism, that it's valuable, is that it introduces other ways of thinking, other worldviews, other value systems, and it helps you to understand them. Not just because they're black or because they're gay or because they're this or that, but because they think differently. But to the extent that these Hollywood movies put black faces in the movies or put sort of different cultures in the movies or minorities, they tend to contain the same values still. So to me, just the multiculturalism part is not that impressive.
Well put, Matthew.
Does that make sense?
No, it makes sense.
Yeah, so you're a racist.
Yeah. I mean, that's what the gist is, isn't it?
I just don't feel comfortable seeing people not
All right.
I mean, I don't care if it's if it's a Vulcan or if it's a Wookiee, you know, whatever it is. If it's something different imaginatively, you know, and I guess that's a hard thing to pin down, different imaginative values, you know. So I like to think that the movies I watch show me a world that I've never seen before, don't just make me feel better about the one I've already sort of decided on.
So Matt, what else do we have to lay out here?
Well, what we're going to do now is we're going to ask Matthew Film Guy.
Well, I have a movie recommendation.
That's what I was going to ask you.
Yeah, I got into this documentary almost by accident. I didn't even know it existed, and it is horrifying. I don't know what you guys feel about Vice magazine's TV show. I sort of am of two minds about it. Like they report on some stuff that I didn't ever really think that I would see, like on camera. So there is a sort of like America's Scariest Home Videos quality to it. So it's like a Faces of Death, almost a visceral kind of lowbrow attachment to it. But there's also, I think, some very interesting political reporting that they do from time to time. And I don't know how I got to this, besides the sort of like, you know, this is Dan Cortez with Extreme War. Today we're in the war zone, you know, like
I'm
that kind
dying
of
to hear what this is. So,
this isn't a Vice magazine thing, but it has some of that, just visceral, like, holy crap, I can't believe I'm watching this. It is called Return to Homs, and it is shot by cell phones and low budget video cameras in Syria right now, and basically in the last year. And it revolves around some guys who were just like regular working guys and got sucked into one or the other of these militias, and just their horrifying day-to-day sort of, grunt on the ground dealing with attacking and being attacked by the various factions. And it is horrifying. And, I don't think it's not extremely clearly politically astute about everything, but it really is a you are there. If you want to know what's going on in Syria and how just fucked up beyond all belief it is, see this movie. It's on iTunes. It's called Return from Homs, and it is sobering. It is not a, you know, sit back, blaze up, and enjoy your Saturday afternoon.
Is that a reference to my Nancy Grace comment, Matthew?
That's right, yeah, okay. Exactly.
So Return to Homs. Michael, make note.
No, that's my kind of – I actually think
– Is it great? Return from Homs or
Return to Homs.
H-O-M-S is the city there.
But – and I think – I just want to add to it really – I've heard of it. I've been meaning to see it. And last summer I had some drinks with a Syrian filmmaker actually who – now he's based in Paris, but he's still smuggling documentaries out of Syria as we speak. And that was kind of like his most basic point was like, can you guys at least watch this stuff?
Yeah.
Like, and I was glad to see that was made. Yeah, definitely check that out.
Yeah, and it literally had to be smuggled out in various devices. And I wouldn't exactly say it's an uplifting story of what could be happening there, but from someone like me who's seen almost no war footage or news coverage of that, it was gobsmacking or stunning or whatever the new word is this week.
Ah, sounds like I'll have to check it out. Now, Matt, before we go, I feel like it would be wrong of you and I to discuss movies without talking about TV too, because that's what we do when it's a Matt and Matt conversation.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit. Let me take a few minutes to talk about TV. What are you watching? What's good? Maybe we'll talk a little bit about Walking Dead too.
Well, you know, you've caught me in the middle of all these amazing mid-season hiatuses. Have you noticed how they started to?
That's a new thing now. Yes, the mid-season hiatus.
And they've gone so far as to say this is the last episode before the season hiatus.
There's two finales now to every season of a show.
That's brilliant marketing. It's brilliant marketing, but I was just laughing at every show's way of selling it. And they're hyping the second-to-last episode. Tune in. Don't miss the final episode of this year before next fall.
After the first episode of a season, only six more episodes left.
Yeah. Actually, you've caught me right in the middle of all that, so I don't know where I've been. I think I started watching the new Marvel show, Agent Carter, which is fun. It's like a spinoff of Captain America.
I wanted to see that, but I wasn't too excited because I remember I watched that first one or two episodes of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and I just couldn't. I was so disappointed.
You know, that show grew on me too. You know, as a former Marvel fanboy from back in my teen years, I stuck with it, and that has its charms and its rewards. It's not. It has a tendency to stack up on my DVR before I get to it.
Yeah.
But am I running to any TV shows right now? I don't think so. You know, I watched the mini series that they did on Sci-Fi Channel called Ascension, which I thought was a very interesting.
I think someone else mentioned that. Yes.
That was a fairly interesting, if overly sex-laden, as the shows are these days.
Kids these days, Matthew.
Yeah, the kids these days, they want to rut around in space everywhere.
Hollywood with their sex and drugs.
You know, I don't mind that. I don't mind that. But if it seems gratuitous, then I'm just like, this isn't, you know, this isn't even doing anything for me.
Yeah.
Another sci-fi show that I get into.
Yeah, go talk about it with Nancy Grace. Whatever, dude.
What I'm saying to you, though, is that you
can have responsibility
Guys, I thought the same thing when I heard that clip. She is a parody of herself. Like she's
What I liked about that clip is I feel like she liked 2 Chainz, and I almost read it as like she had a small crush on him.
Oh, 2 Chainz.
She's like, oh, 2 Chainz, you just take me out. And just
they're nice where I wear 2 Chainz. You want to go out?
Yeah.
But she would just say, I'm saying what I'm saying to you is, and then you could see her thinking, what am I saying to him? Like, is that child molesters will give weed to children.
Child
and how can
molesters
you live
with that? Will bring marijuana bricks to the schools. And they're not as nice as you, 2 Chainz.
2 Chainz,
all right.
Let's talk marijuana. Right. Let's talk marijuana legalization while you take me out on a date at the same damn time.
Let me try some of this. How bad could this be? Oh, my goodness.
Oh my lord. Okay,
it actually feels really good.
So what was that other sci-fi show you were going to mention?
I started watching The 100, which is a CW show, so I was expecting lots of teen romance, but they were surprisingly light on that and higher on the sci-fi concepts of future humans who had to leave the planet due to nuclear war, which is always my favorite. I love the apocalypse. I love everything.
As much of a sci-fi movie fan I am, I've always had a problem getting into sci-fi TV shows.
Really?
Something about just the way, I guess, television is shot or made and how it looks. I just felt it always made sci-fi look very cheap.
Well, they'd have to as a budgetary thing.
Of course, yes. But it always –
takes a route around that by basically – being shot in the woods for the majority of it. So there's some
smart
space station stuff, but it's mostly on a post-apocalyptic Earth, which is overgrown. So shouldn't offend your delicate production
design. No, but it's honestly a pet peeve of mine. But before we go, quick, what did you think of so far the first half of season 5 of The Walking Dead without any spoilers?
I'm into it. I've heard some grousings and some grumblings, but I
really?
Dug it.
I can't believe this show is able to get better and better with each season.
Usually that's not the case. The first two season episodes, just because they learned their lesson of, like, let's move the plot along. Let's not, like, stay 10 minutes, you know, 10 episodes with each new development.
Yeah.
You know, so they're moving along.
I mean, season 1 was fantastic, obviously. And then
I have to repeat one major criticism that Mary, my fiance, brought up about the way that thing happened to Beth. She just thought Beth acted out of character right at the end there, and that was a little gratuitous.
No, I think they were building up to it. Maybe it was the arc with just Beth was pretty weird and not so maybe not as entertaining or captivating as the rest of the show. But I felt like they built that up to the point where it made sense for her to do what she did.
I guess I liked her storyline. I liked her struggle and that sort of thing between her and the female cop. I just thought maybe that last move was a little, like, we just thought.
I always felt.
You know, they say in improv, play to the top of your intelligence. Every move you make should be, like, the smartest thing you could have done. And in that sense, it made her a little dumb, I think, to do it the way she did it.
I always felt that as much as I actually do like the actress who played Beth, but I feel like I feel like the role actually got a little bit beyond her capabilities at points.
I guess so. I mean, she started out as a complete piece of the wallpaper.
I mean,
you know,
and like, that's probably why they cast her at that point because it
and also
wasn't
I want to know why didn't her sister really ask about her for like the entire first part of the season. That was a little bit of a
I feel like the show could have actually lost it completely third season. I felt like that's the worst season overall. It's a horrible season compared to the rest.
Was that the jail season?
The jail season in Woodbury. I felt it was just terrible. I felt like the storylines were not connecting. They were just randomly killing off people they didn't know what to do with, who could have actually had interesting story arcs that did end up leading to their demise. I mean, certain people they had built up out of the blue on the episode they ended up killing them off on.
Right, that became a thing. Like, I'm the new guy. Oh, bullet in my head.
But then the fourth season was fantastic, and then this fifth season, geez, just starting off the way they did. And then we, of course, got a comic book favorite scene, the tainted meat scene in this season.
Oh, was that a comic book favorite scene? Okay, yeah,
yes,
that's great.
A big scene in the comics. And it's not done with the guy who they did it in the show.
I see. Yeah, they changed some people around. Well, look, for my money, I'm ready for them to get the hell out of Georgia. Like, I would think, like, by now they'd want to look around more than, like, one county.
Well, if they follow the comic books, you will get your way very soon.
Good. That's why the whole Washington thing dashed my hopes. I was like, I was hoping they're going to Washington. But, you know, I just like seeing – I'm glad they even went back into the city, because just for visceral world building, I just like to see our massively complicated society just go to hell and just be completely in ruins. There's something very comforting about that. There's something very uplifting about knowing that that could all happen at any time. And so any scenes of just visceral apocalypse
I feel like if we're going to go down, let's have some fun with it. Let's let it be a zombie apocalypse. Let's take some zombies down while society crumbles, you know?
Well, you know, I was talking about this with Mary, too. It's like so many of the more popular things these days, even back to Battlestar Galactica 10 years ago, are about, like, the end of society as we know it. There's been a lot of that these days.
Well, I mean, look how right-wingers make their money, like Glenn Beck and Alex Jones.
It's the end. Matthew feels fine, if I can make a really bizarre callback right there.
Yeah, I do.
Did you get the joke?
I love REM.
There you go. I knew that was for you. It's not my bag, as you know, but that was for you, my friend.
Yeah, you're referencing above your age. That's great. I appreciate
that. You like that?
But that's because you're culturally informed. But I also
wanted
to say,
far, please?
I think it. Okay.
Is it 360 up?
It's okay. It's okay. It's a joke.
Is it 360 up?
I'll wait. Yes.
Put the 360 up.
But no, because now you're
just put the 360 up.
You're trying to make a joke, and I'm not going to let you.
Just put the 360 up. It should be up at all times, anyway.
It's up. It has been up.
No, it's not even. It's not even. Yes. Oh God. Yes. The
I don't hear it. What the hell?
I hear it, guys. But I just wanted to point out and to throw it to you
there
guys.
There we go.
Okay. Jesus Christ.
Well, no.
Yeah, Moses. But don't you think that there is something in the air about the way our society has gotten either so complex or so sort of isolated from understanding how it all works, that there is a sort of yearning for it all to crumble and collapse?
For society to crumble and collapse, but
I think it represents our understanding finally of how precarious it all is, and we're sort of in some cultural way preparing ourselves.
We need a global jubilee. We need all debts forgiven. We need to wipe the slate clean in a positive way.
And if not that, then zombie apocalypse, and let me take some zombies out while we head to this chaos and the disorder.
But you guys, Sam interviewed that author Derek Jensen before. Do you guys remember him?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That's his sort of thing, is that, like, complex civilization is inherently based on domination and slavery and resource raping from other places to bring to a city so it can be concentrated there. And it's inherently unstable. And I feel like this kind of popular culture is in some way appealing to the part of us that's just ready for it all to just, like, the house of cards just to fall. And I don't know, there's something in there. And as much as it is marketing and selling what sells, I think the reason this is what's selling these days is there's some sort of intuitive sense that society is very precariously based the way it is, technologically sophisticated and complicated. And just any one little thing could really upset the apple cart.
Brilliant point, and Sam would have never let you go on that long.
Yeah. Ah, well, I appreciate that you guys are a little
You come
more...
on here to talk movies, buddy. What's with all this smarty nonsense?
No, because this is what I'm thinking of. There's so many movies that, especially to me, appeal to me, this sort of death trip you can go on, like, oh, yeah, it's all going down. There's something enjoyable and troubling about that. So, I don't know, even Walking Dead. So that was the connection.
Well, I also watched The Mindy Project and Marry Me to sort of balance things out. Maybe you need to do that, too.
I think those are also harbingers of the apocalypse.
Those are actually two very good shows. You should check them out.
What was the second one? Mindy Project?
Marry Me.
Okay, I didn't hear
it's
that one.
It's that new NBC sitcom. It's actually very good. It's one of their better recent comedies.
All right. I have a very thin sitcom palette, but I think I was going to try Broad City. Have you guys not gotten into that?
I have not watched it, but I've heard nothing but good things, and I very much want to watch it.
The only televised comedy I really watch is Key and Peele, and I also just watched two seasons of Nathan for You, the Comedy Central
show.
I've
heard good things about that, too. And Key and Peele, Michael and I usually consume Key and Peele via clips in the office.
They're great. Yeah, they're great.
But I would suggest everyone go out there and watch Nathan for You. And Sam, I think, would love it. It's Nathan. Oh shit, I forgot his last name. He's a comedian, but John Benjamin has a role on that show, and he basically he gives like bad business advice. It's like this reality type show where he's a business expert.
Oh, is this where he made some news with this show because he created dumb Starbucks or something
exactly.
like that?
Exactly.
Oh, that sounds like something I would get into.
Yes.
This sounds good. Brilliant. He's Ali G level brilliant.
Oh, okay. I'm all over it.
Oh, okay.
I like it.
We'll check it out then. All right, Matthew.
Thanks, man.
All right, guys. Pleasure. Sorry I was a little late, but I'll be there next time.
Well, you're not forgiven. I don't know if there'll be a next time. So goodbye.
All right. Well, this was fun if it's my last one. Bye-bye.
Things collapse, man.
Yeah, that's how society crumbles, man. Just like your last time on the Majority Report. All right. Take care, dude.
Have a good weekend. You too. Bye-bye.
All right. So I don't know who you're talking to, Michael.
Fuck. Excuse me. We're going to go quick to the fun half.
Michael keeps forgetting to press the button.
Hold on. We don't have time for silly quips like that.
Unless Michael has a silly quip to make.
We're going to go to the fun half right now. Matt's going to do a story, then I'm going to do a story, then we're going to wrap up and obviously get to your IMs. Matt's going to fire up the phones. You can call us at what's the number?
646-257-3920.
We're going a little bit late, but we're going to cut some of this obviously for the for the podcast. Before we do all of this, Jimmy Reefercake has a song for us, and he seems a little upset or something, but we'll play it. Hold on one moment.
Do you want to switch and I'll play it? Oh, there we go.
Take us into the fun half, and then we'll switch.
All right, what's it called?
It's called I Won't Take It Personally.
I won't take it personally. That's what Germo tweeted to me. No, I won't take it personally. No, no, no. That you don't value freedom and liberty. I'm sorry if you don't understand my song. What I'm singing, what I'm saying, or is it just too long? If you wanna hear it all, go to allthehypocrisy.com. And if you don't, I won't take it personally. Most of my fans are over there in Germany. I won't take it personally. Your stoner libertarian impression. I see your prejudice. I see it totally. But by all means, use your freedom of expression. I won't take it personally. That's what my friend Germo tweeted to me. No, I won't take it personally. No, 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 no. When you put down my freedom and liberty.
Where's the applause? I do have to give him an applause.
I like, as always, very
put
soulful.
The 360 a bit louder so everyone could hear the applause.
They can hear the applause. It was a good song. Dude,
salty Jimmy Reefercake.
Just so you know, that whole libertarian impersonation is actually not of you, and it's not of a stoner. That's not the inspiration for that.
What is the inspiration for it, Michael?
What you know what the inspiration for that is.
What is it? I don't know what you're talking about.
What are you talking about? Is Sam right that you don't ever listen to the show?
That's your thing, buddy.
No, he's becoming out right, with that. You're off in your Reddit threads. Oh, wait, we're going to go to the
first, become a member.
Become a member.
Today at majority.fm. You go to jointhemajorityreport.com. What? Jointhemajorityreport.com. And you can become a member for less than a cheap cup of coffee a day. You can also support this show by going to majoritykickback.com and buying all your junk, your Amazon junk, through that link. You will see no difference in price. We just get a kickback, a small little percentage of what Amazon makes. You get what you need, and you support this show. You can also support this show by and also support Fair Trade Coffee and Chocolates by going to justcoffee.coop, that's .coop, and using coupon code MAJORITY. You get 10% off your entire order. I feel like I'm forgetting something. Subscribe to us on YouTube, youtube.com/SamCedar, on Twitter at MajorityFM, Facebook at facebook.com/MajorityReport. We will see you in the better half. Our show on Monday will be a Martin Luther King special. Put that lower while I'm talking, please. It'll be a Martin Luther King special with a bunch of great speeches. And Sam will be back on Tuesday.